This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasudhi. 18 months ago, Help International School began its mission of providing students a balanced and holistic education with the philosophy, life in all its fullness. In the studio with me to share how far the school has come are Mark Jones, the Deputy Principal and Head of Secondary, and James DeGazio, the Head of Performing Arts, to give us an update on what's happened over the last 18 months, as well as, you know, where the school's actually going in terms of, you know, academics and everything else. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. How are you today?
Yeah, very well, thank you.
Mark, I'm going to start with you. I mean, you've been working away from the UK for the past 15 years. Could you give me a little bit about your background and, you know, how you landed here in Malaysia?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I studied in the UK. I majored in sports and biomedicine. And then I taught for about 5 years before moving into international education. As a child, I was very fortunate to spend many years traveling around with my parents. My father worked overseas in telecommunications, and I felt really privileged growing up to live in so many different countries. And now the opportunity to share that same sort of lifestyle with my own family is something that I think is fantastic.
And this is your first time in Malaysia?
No, actually, I was lucky enough to travel around Malaysia with my now wife in back in 99. Mm-hmm. We just love the sort of cultural mix, the diversity. And so when the opportunity presented itself to come back and work in Malaysia, I just jumped at the chance.
But then, you know, being on holiday is entirely different.
Absolutely.
Working here has been different.
Yeah,
Mark,
yeah,
what have
yeah,
been
absolutely.
Some of your what have been some of your biggest challenges, you know, thus far as deputy principal?
Yeah, absolutely. I think another of the real real opportunities of working at Help International School has been the fact that we're not only a sort of new school but a growing school. So that brings challenges, you know, implementing our sort of policies and procedures consistently and effectively across the school. And yeah, it's definitely a challenge. It hasn't been easy, but it's sort of a challenge that I've never had in my career to date to work in a new school and a growing school. And I'm really enjoying it. But I have to say, you know, we're very fortunate to have a really good team of committed education professionals and staff that have stepped up to the plate and really have taken on roles of responsibility and filling those middle management positions really excellently for us and doing a great job.
Help in university generally has a very good reputation, and I think the problem with most international schools is that there's a lot of competition. And I think I've mentioned in even previous interviews, we've got tons of international schools in the Klang Valley, and teachers is always a problem. How do you fill that gap? And I know you have a combination of foreign teachers as well as local teachers. What's the percentage? What's the difference?
Yeah, something that we're very proud of, and we are trying to maintain a 50-50 percentage right across the school. You know, at the moment, there's probably a few more locally qualified members of staff in the primary school than in the secondary school. But overall, if you look at the entire staff, we've got about 115 teaching staff, giving us a ratio of about, with the slightly just over 900 students that we've got. That's a ratio of about one teacher to every 8 students, which I think is fantastic and very, very healthy. And as I say, it's about a split of about 50-50 between local and expat qualified staff.
Okay, I'll come back to you in a while, Mark. But James, Help offers the option of the IGCSE Performing Arts as a subject, James. I mean, you've been in Help International from day one. How has the take-up rate been? And, you know, you come from, you know, you've got so much experience in performing arts. How are you doing so far?
I think we're doing really well. I think what's exciting is being able to embed the curriculum across both in primary, the IPC, that's the International Primary Certificate, is that correct? I'm terrible with acronyms. So we tried to make a holistic, I hate that term, I'm so sorry, a holistic experience so that the student can go from a history class studying Roman ancient history. They go into drama, they perform a play by Plautus in the 2nd century, a Roman play. They go into music, they sing Roman liturgical music. They go into dance, they do dance routines that have been exhumed from Pompeii. And then they go on into another subject where in English they might be looking at Julius Caesar. So
And IPC runs what? It runs for every 8 weeks? Is there a duration in which you switch subjects after a while?
Yeah.
So about 8 weeks. And what's the advantage of that? Because not all schools offer IPC. How different is that from the rest?
Yeah, it's a thematic style of learning. So, as James has already said, sort of all the subjects, interlink. And so it's really, you're bringing out the sort of best of the sort of, independence and the sort of freedom for sort of learning to go in different directions. And I think that sort of gives the students and the staff wonderful flexibility with where they're not sort of stuck to a particular scheme of work or lesson plan, that they can really be sort of very innovative.
You've done a couple of performances now for HELP, James.
Yes.
You want to tell us about that?
Sure. We've done Midsummer Night's Dream, which we set in ancient Japan. We're now doing Wicked, the West End musical, which is uncut. I took a mighty big bite. but what's astounding is, and always surprises me in a wonderful way, is that they rise to the challenge. You have students, I have a 12-year-old singing Elphaba and doing a tremendously amazing job. And I think if you can do that now, what will you be able to do in a few years as her training continues in music, as her maturity grows and her understanding of contextual analysis and the history and the themes it's very exciting.
How do you get all the children involved, James? Because not all of them is going to end up being the star. There's always going to be one or two of them who will shine.
That's hard.
But how do you get the rest to, participate in the whole process of performing arts?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with making everyone feel that they're important, and they are, because it's a team effort. It's an ensemble piece. And one of the things that I learned early on in my career is that there are no small parts. And you can take that one line and turn it into something very special, where you're a memorable three-dimensional character on stage. And that's the philosophy I go with. And I try, even if you're a member of the chorus, I make sure, hopefully, that you have a name, you understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, that you're just not an extra. Everyone is integral to the entire piece. And it's exciting because I get to work with a wonderful dance instructor and an amazing music teacher. So we work in collaboration, which is wonderful. I get students who share ideas with me. It is a collaborative process, and I'm open to taking on ideas from many different sources. Being head chef, I take their ideas and I mix everything up and hopefully produce something wonderful.
And you try and get as many children involved in this?
As many as possible. We have children from year 5 through to the A-level program who are participating. Now, it's not like we did last year where almost everyone in the entire school took part. The school's grown too large for that.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've done is we've split it into a primary production and a secondary production.
Same play? Same
no,
musical?
Different
ones? Okay.
Different. We did a different piece, The Jungle Book, which was for primary, and they did a musical devised piece and based on Rudyard Kipling's work. And then we're doing Wicked for secondary, although I've allowed primary to, if they were really passionate, to join our group and work with us.
Mark, one of the goals for HELP International is to offer a wide range of IGCSE subjects.
Correct.
How many subjects would you be offering ideally? And not everybody, for an example, offers performing arts as
no,
a
sure,
subject.
Sure, sure, yeah. I mean, currently we offer 22 different IGCSE courses. Now, of course, the students don't do all 22, of course. Most of our students take between sort of 9 and 12. However, I do take your point there is sort of definitely some room for improvement, and we're hoping to increase that sort of over the coming years to possibly getting up to around about 25. There are three IGCSEs in particular that I'd like to bring into the program, one of those being Global Perspectives, sort of encouraging our students to be international citizens. and possibly going into careers in the future in diplomacy and things like that. Another one would be, and this is a real trend in the UK at the moment, whereas sort of moving away from your traditional sort of IT and technology lessons into more sort of computer science would be another one, where it's much more programming based. And obviously with the development of the sort of internet as well, but also app design and things like that, that's a real sort of growing area in terms of IGCSEs. And the final one, which I've had success introducing in previous schools where I've worked, is again a particularly increasingly popular IGCSE worldwide, and that's travel and tourism.
Wow. For IGCSE?
Yeah, absolutely.
Where was I when all of this was going to happen?
I know. Likewise.
James, anyone taken up performing arts as an IGCSE subject?
We had some interest, but not enough to warrant running the course.
Why is that?
Well,
how do you get people educated? Because I can understand. I mean, I'm a Malaysian parent myself.
Oh, then
I don't want my
you've
child.
Answered the question.
I don't want my child to do performing arts.
They'll never make a living.
Exactly.
I had a very passionate discussion with some parents. I don't know. This was one of our, I believe it was, we were at Help University, and they were coming, it was an information session, and people were coming to feel this out. And someone said, I don't want my daughter to waste her time doing drama. And I was a little shocked and somewhat annoyed and frankly furious, but I used all my diplomatic powers. And I asked her if she watched movies,
yeah.
If she listened to the radio, did she listen to music, did she go to plays, did she...
The mummy or
and
the child?
It was the mother.
Okay.
And she said yes, and I said, well, who do you think performs those? You know, these people make a living, they're artists. And there's a huge industry worth millions. And that was part of my selling point this year. This is what I thought, I'd be very clever. And I did a huge amount of research of how much money is generated through the entertainment industry. It didn't work.
I mean,
but I'm still trying.
But when you do come across a child with potential, who would potentially do well in IGCSE, in performing arts?
Okay, here's the thing, too.
Do you encourage them?
IGCSE is a stronger focus on the academic textual study, on the study of the practitioners and the history and the context of the pieces. It's a much more intellectual pursuit than, although I try to make my classes as intellectually challenging as possible, I only get them for an hour a week. And therefore, if we're producing a play, at the moment we're working on a reduced Shakespeare. So I take a play and I edit it down to 5 minutes. And we have students who are doing Romeo and Juliet, Antony and Cleopatra, and they're doing it in 5 minutes. That's quite exciting. It's mm-hmm. a lot of fun. However, the students who would be studying IGCSE would be studying the history of Elizabethan theater, with only, let's say, 20 to 25% of practical work. Now, I think parents aren't quite aware of that, and they don't, and it'll take some time to raise the profile of that industry. And the industry here in Malaysia isn't as strong as it might be. I mean, you lost your filming industry, which is sad. And I know there are I keep meeting a lot of very amazing artists here and people who are trying to bring Malaysia in the limelight once again, both theatrically and filmically and musically, and it's your business structure.
Yeah.
It's all business. But show business is business.
It is.
I taught one of the IGCSE subjects is performing arts business. You learn how to run a business and run yourself as a business.
Which is what's lacking amongst many artists today. They can't put up a marketing plan. They want funding. They don't know how to start because they don't have that. And you said you have intellectual conversations. And I'm not assuming that everyone doesn't read. But we're a nation that does not read, Mark. How do you encourage that in school? And this, if you ask me, this starts at home.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, and I don't think it's just reading sort of books. Although a couple of weeks ago we did have our sort of book week and book fair, and we had authors and workshops and a fantastic, you know, week-long event of activities, centered around, you know, reading and even some hilarious photographs of the students sort of reading in trash cans and in all sorts of weird and wonderful places, sort of getting caught reading.
You had them coming dressed up as characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we had a character day, and I was for my sins, I was Captain Hook for the day. And I enjoyed scaring the little ones.
Who are you, James?
Saruman.
Okay. Yeah, but no, without a doubt, it's a challenge, and obviously because we're a one-to-one iPad school as well, so all of the students have iPads from year three upwards. It is a challenge to actually get them to pick up other forms of media and read. But hopefully, you know, with electronic books and a wonderful library that we've got as well. It's pushing that as much as we possibly can. You know, if I can just go back to your previous question to James on sort of, you know, why performing arts. I worked in Switzerland for 4 years and I worked under the IB program, the International Baccalaureate. And I think although we don't offer that at Help International School, we run GCSEs and A-levels. Mm-hmm. I think we can learn a lot from some of the sort of theories in the IB program. And they are very clear in terms of what they expect from their learners. In fact, they produce something called the IB Learner Profile. And that's really come from studying, really, what is it that universities and employers want from students when they leave school? And you look at some of those things like, of course, academically very knowledgeable, but, you know, to be critical thinkers. I'll focus on this next one, particularly with regards to performing arts. Skilled communicators. I mean, I think that speaks for itself. You know, to be open-minded and to be risk-takers. I mean, performing arts surely is all about taking risks and being a skilled communicator. And I think that's really hitting those two things that, as I say, universities and employers want from students these days.
I think opening up your mind, they walk the talk, really, these artists, because when I have them in, and you know, they sometimes I can never get my head around performing artists. I can't, James, I'm going to admit it, but I think what I've learned from them is that you can let go and not make sense of it, not have to make sense of everything. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's probably the way I grew up in the education system
in.
It is. No, but they've helped me understand and let go. And contemporary dance, for an example.
That comes from having had umpteen hours of rehearsal, personal study, historical background information, research. They've done it so it looks like they can let go, because the work is done. The foundation is there. That's why they can let go and fly.
They can let go and fly. I can't make sense of it. So hence as the audience, I need to make sense of this. And so what they've taught me is it is all right to let go and just enjoy it. And not have to make sense of everything. Contemporary dance, for an example. I struggle trying to understand contemporary dance, James. Yeah.
You have to go see NDT2.
Okay. I'll keep that in mind. We'll come back and find out more about sports. I know Help International has been doing a lot as far as sports is concerned. And Mark, your background is sports.
Yeah, and I have some breaking news to share with you.
Wonderful. So that's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasuthi. The folks from Help International School here to give us an update. It's been 18 months since they've been in existence. Mark Jones, the Deputy Principal and Head of Secondary. James DeGazio, Head of Performing Arts. The reason they're here is because there's going to be an open day this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I'll give you more details up next. But we are looking at the curriculum at Help, and you know, the motto is very much, or the philosophy is very much, life in all its fullness. And a lot of people talk about holistic education. How many really walk the talk? We're finding out how Help is actually walking the talk. Mark, you have a sports background, and mm-hmm. how does Help prioritize sports? Because sports is usually not the most important thing when it comes to many students here in the country.
Sure. Okay, well, you know, absolutely. Whilst our academic programs are, of course, our number one priority, you know, I think we feel strongly that just as in life, you know, life is not all about work, but in the same way, school shouldn't all be about study. And this fits very nicely, you know, as you mentioned, with our school motto of celebrating life in all its fullness. And therefore, we do try to support, you know, our students and give them a rich program of sports, not only sports, but cultural activities and music as well. I mean, I think at last count, actually embedded in our curriculum, in our PE lessons, and we have some excellent PE professionals delivering those lessons. You know, they are by all means not just given a football and told to go and kick it around a field. I mean, it is really sort of, you know, structured, academic, high quality, you know, coaching and teaching and fault correction and progression in sort of, at last count, up to about almost 20 different sports. You know, of course, all your major sports like football, badminton, athletics, right to sort of, you know, the more unusual things like ultimate frisbee and etc. But you know, as I mentioned just before the break, I'm really pleased to announce that just today, some breaking news. We've been, yeah, James, you don't even know about this, but we've actually been just today invited to take part in a very well-established inter-school sports league run by the KLISS group of international schools. So that includes the British School of KL, Tenby, Taylors, Nexus, and the International School at Park City. So that's a real coup for us to be part of that really, really established inter-school sports league.
Well done, guys. Congratulations.
Yeah, well done. I mean, is it difficult to be a part of this league?
Yeah, it is, because, you know, it's up until now it's been quite a closed league, but they invited sort of tenders, and we were there on Friday, and we made a presentation and clearly impressed them with our pitch, and they've invited us to join them. So we're absolutely thrilled, and I think it's you know, giving our students that chance to experience competitive sport in a fun and healthy environment like that, I think is a real bonus.
What type of sport is encompassed in the league?
The main sports are things like badminton and football and swimming and athletics. They also do things like triathlon, and then they have some sort of other, you might call sort of minor sports as well going on. But you know, it's only going to get bigger and grow more and more. So you
need to go home and get
understandably
to need to get back and get to work.
Absolutely, yeah. Get
so much
of,
work
training
to be done
with these teams, and that's another thing I would say, actually, sort of, you know, working with our teams in our sort of CCA programs and our ECA programs, you know, ensuring that all of our students have the chance to try out for the different sports. You know, none of our school teams are closed. They're open to everybody that wants to come along and try and be part of it, you know. But again, the flip side is it's not all just about sort of trying to prepare school teams. A lot of what we do is just for our students that want to come and try something new or just have a go at something that they haven't done before.
Okay, and something else I want to go through. Every student at the secondary level has to go through something called design and technology. Mm-hmm. This is something very interesting. You want to elaborate a little bit on that?
You said they have to go through it, like a gauntlet or something.
Well, they do. They don't have a choice, do they?
No, but it's not a painful experience. It's
well,
pretty
it really,
exciting.
It really depends. It really depends, because you're breaking down gender biasness and everything through these activities. So it can be a little painful for some. Don't you think?
Yeah. No, I was lucky enough recently, sort of a couple of weeks ago, to observe a textiles lesson, which is part of the design and technologies carousel that the students move around. They do product design, they work with some woodwork and you know, designing different things and building different things. But actually, to see a group of sort of, you know, 15, 16 year old boys doing sewing and needlework and
there
things
you
like
go,
that.
James,
and I have
can
to say,
you sew, James?
My mother was smart enough to teach me how to sew, do laundry, and cook.
Okay.
But, you know, but I have to say, I mean, I sat there for the sort of hour that I observed this, you know, this lesson, and it was just fantastic just to see a quiet classroom with students so intently focused on what they were doing, this piece of sewing, this piece of you know, needlework that they were doing. It was really great, and I just thought, what a sort of wonderful contrast to, you know, their academic studies and the sort of, you know, the pressure of studying for exams and preparing for tests in maths and English and science, to actually come and just have an hour where they can just do something manual, creative, you know, that's just that little bit out of the box. What a release. And so then when they do go back to their sort of, you know, purely academic studies, you know, surely that's going to be beneficial.
I mean, were the boys really enjoying themselves?
Yeah, of course they were focused. They were into it. They were intense, yeah.
And they go around sharing. They're so excited and they have so much pride in some of the food that they make in the kitchens. They'll come down to the canteen and go, try this, Mr. DeGazio. And I'm like, oh, very, and they're so happy. And it's, they'll go off to university. Mum will not be there to sew their clothes.
Absolutely.
Mum will not be there to cook their food. They'll need to have those skills. It's really important.
Life skills, very important life skills. And I go back to the IB learner profile that I mentioned earlier on. You know, another three of their so-called criteria in their learner profile are to be caring, to be balanced and an all-round individual, and to be reflective and to really think about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Most of us in the country are very academically skewed. And you were talking about life skills and sports and all of that, right? So where does academics fall into all of this?
Of course, it's number one. It's the number one priority. Of course, it's got to be. But I think you know, time and time again, we are being told that what universities and what employers want is really well-rounded individuals coming out of school. And I think, you know, yes, we have a responsibility as a school to prepare our students academically, first and foremost. But without a doubt, you know, these other so-called soft skills, I don't see them as such. I think they really are
integral. It's a derogatory term, soft skills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But, you know, to be a critical thinker, to be a skilled communicator, to be principled, to have a sense of fair play.
To be able to design something and then create it with your own hands is something to take great pride of. And there's a huge industry. There are people who make millions of dollars doing this.
Yeah.
Where's the imagination?
You know, let me tell you a little story
just
about.
Go
ahead. I was just going to say, about 5 years ago, I probably had one of my best ever holidays. I had a two-week holiday, and in that holiday, I didn't go anywhere. I stayed at home, but actually, I built a shed and I built a fence at my house, and just doing something sort of creative, and manual, and working up a sweat, and at the end having something to show for it. All right, the sense of achievement was fantastic, and I still say that was probably one of my best holidays.
You know, Mark, when just to give me an example of a design and technology class, for an example, the kids go in and they cook something. So what do the teachers tell them? I mean, are you supposed to make pizza and you go back, and where does the creativity come into this? Because usually you say, okay, I'm going to make burgers today, and this is the recipe, kids, go ahead and do it, right? But how do these classes run?
I think it really starts from sort of, you know, weeks before, the whole sort of preparation, buying the ingredients, getting everything ready, designing sort of, you know, what particular recipe, maybe going online and researching different burger recipes, different pizza recipes that it may be, and then just trying things out. And of course, sort of, you know, the sort of peer assessment, trying to sort of you know, make sure you make a nicer pizza than your than your partner, and having a bit of a cook-off, so they turn it into a bit of a competition. Then of course it's the whole manufacture process, how they go about actually sort of preparing the food and making it, and then of course, very importantly, cleaning up after themselves
and health and safety with regards to hygiene and food hygiene.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course. Yeah. There you go. For boys who sew and cook and do the laundry, there is a text message here. James sews, cooks, and does the laundry. Is he still single? Now, if that's a positive thing for the boys, there you go. Not just playing the guitar, but you know.
See
what?
You, gents.
Yep.
It's important.
1.5 years since you opened, I think, in terms of teachers, I mean, are they leaving? I think contracts will probably expire for some of them.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's always very difficult in international schools. It's always a feature that, you know, I don't think there's any international school anywhere in the world that doesn't see sort of retaining its staff as a sort of high priority. And of course, it is for us. We do have a number of staff leaving, but I'm pleased to say that most of those are just coming to the end of their contract. That, you know, they're not leaving the school because they don't like the school. It's just they're moving on to different things, moving countries and things like that, sort of family relocations, etc. But it only represents about 10% of our total staff. And I think that sort of certainly compared to the sort of six or seven other international schools where I've taught previously, that's a very, very healthy percentage.
Help University is moving to the campus next to the international school. How would this sort of affect or impact the international school? I think that's going to be in, what, 2 years' time?
Well, I've been promised a new theatre.
Ah, there you go. Then you may get, with more education, James, I think more people will join the performing arts and take it up as an IGCSE subject.
I hope so. You don't necessarily need a degree in theater to be able to produce good theater. You do need to have curiosity and intelligence and a passion and an imagination. However, if it's something that you want to produce television, produce theater, you need to have a background and an understanding of the history and the practitioners, because you'll be a little out of your depth once you get to meet the people who are actually running things. They have a high degree of education. When I was at the academy, I was with people from Oxford University, people who had given up law to further study performing arts. And they were very intelligent and intimidating people. People who had come from the royal families of theatrical families. And it was intimidating. I mean, they had an education and a background that I still strive today to equal.
And how will the university complement the school besides the theatre?
No, absolutely. We're very excited. I mean, sort of, you get a great view from our school library at the moment, and they're sort of just starting the second floor construction of the main building, and it's really amazing to see how fast it's flying up. And we're hoping, sort of, you know, within the next year or so, it's going to be complete and sort of operational. And I think there's a huge opportunity for collaboration, certainly on things like research, training, both for our staff and for our students. And sort of, there's going to be a gateway between the two campuses, and I'm sure there'll be a lot of movement between the two different campuses. And sort of, ideally, I think, what we have aspirations to happen is really for us to be a center of excellence for teacher training. So not only can students at the university come to our school for their for their teaching practices and teaching placements, but also our current staff, our teaching assistants, maybe we can get them sort of qualified. And I know a lot of them are enrolling on teaching qualification courses. And likewise, many of our staff that are already qualified teachers, pushing them on to do their master's programs and things like that. So I think there's wonderful opportunities ahead.
And
we've
the university.
Begun that.
Yes,
sorry.
It's already
that process.
Okay. So the university will be ready in about 2 years' time, I understand.
I think so.
So you've got an open day coming up this Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You want to give me more details on that?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for prospective parents to come and have a look, come and visit us, come and meet some of the key members of staff. I mean, all the members of staff will be there, myself and James included. And really, have a tour of the campus. I mean, we're very, very proud of our facilities and our campus. I think it's a wonderful building. I must say, that the building was designed with input from educationalists right from day one. And I think that really shows when you move around the space. You can really see that it's been purpose built for its for its design, for its function.
Fantastic.
And we're very excited. As I say, we're growing quickly. We're currently at 900 students, and we're expecting by September to possibly go up to 1,200.
How are you managing that?
Yeah. Again, I mean, we've got the capacity. We've got capacity for approximately 1,500 potentially students, and that's sort of growing right across the school as well. So it's a little bit in each age group. Sort of primary, secondary, A level programs are growing, but of course next year from September we'll have our first cohort of Year 10 students moving up into Year 11. So they'll be sitting there their IGCSEs for the first time. Mm-hmm. So we've certainly got the space. We've got the staff. We're ready to go.
Fantastic. So the open day.
Oh, sorry.
Go
I just
ahead,
wanted
James.
To say we
yes.
will also have our students there.
Absolutely.
Who we're equally and enormously proud of for student potential students and parents to be able to speak to them on a one-to-one basis and watch them in action, because we'll actually be running classes and courses during that day.
Okay, so this Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., if you would like more information, just give Help International a call. The number is 03-7809-7000. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
Mark Jones, Deputy Principal and Head of Secondary, and James DeGazio, Head of Performing Arts from Help International, on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.